Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So you and your husband decided to carve your own road almost literally. You took established highways, but you got onto the road for this project. Why don't you tell us about what you wanted to do in the project and how that came about?
Sure, absolutely. So I was laid off in 2001 while we were living and working in London, and decided that I really had sort of lost my identity because I had built everything around my career and my job. And when I lost my job, I didn't really know who I was anymore. So I went on the odyssey of just sort of determining how I was going to reinvent myself. And over the, you know, 5 or 6 year period, I had quit my job, started my own company. My husband had done the same thing, and we were so much happier in our life that we decided that we wanted to get out on the road and interview other people like us who had found, you know, a way to do their own thing, either in a corporate world or starting their own company, so we could share this knowledge with the people out there, the millions of people, I think, who want to do something different but aren't sure how to.
And just so our listeners understand what sort of career positions you were in, your job primarily involves writing and your husband's architecture, correct?
Actually, no. I was I did corporate and executive recruiting for about 13 years.
Oh, that's right.
So writing is pretty new to me.
Right.
So I really changed my direction.
Right. Harder to do recruiting from the road, perhaps.
Yeah, I ran my business was recruiting, and I did do that. We ran our businesses while we were doing all of our interviews from the road, which was really pretty interesting and fun. So
that's why you had Airstream set you up in a trailer that was specially designed for office space plus living.
Yeah, exactly, and it was fantastic. We just, you know, figured out how to structure our day so we could get our work done in the morning and then get out on the road in the afternoon and do our interviews. So we just had to set expectations with our clients and, you know, our partners and that type of thing, but it was really a great learning experience.
So, one of the interesting interviews that I thought you have in there, and you've talked to dozens of people on that trip and have fairly long excerpts from some of the interviews. One of the people you interviewed was Robin Sharma, best-selling author and leadership guru, and he talks about people who, well, let me just read it. He says, sometimes you have to jump and the net shows up, as opposed to, let's see the net first, and then I'll jump. So how would you characterize what you and Joe did? Did you see the net first?
No. Well, so I'd say, well, for me, I could see the net, but it wasn't in place yet. So I did take a little bit of a leap of faith, but I had a lot of things put into place. So once I did take that leap, it seemed like everything sort of appeared. And I think sometimes we want everything to be perfect before we make a leap, and it's not always the case. But I do recommend to people to finding, you know, at least having the structure of the net in place and seeing the opportunities, especially, you know, you don't want to be in a financial bind or in a situation, you know, where you feel desperate financially because it's really hard to make inroads towards your goals that way.
And then to switch metaphors, you have a final chapter in the book where you talk about building a bridge where you can make a phase transition.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I think that's important. And that's what I did do. I did do some work on the side while I was in a corporate job to kind of set the business up before I did quit. And I recommend to people to look at all of your options for doing that. And maybe in the short term, you might have to work more hours, but it's so worth it in the long term to get to the point where you're doing what you want to do, you know. And I think that, you know, you can do freelance work. You know, there's all kinds of ways you can build a bridge to that future.
Mm. And I can testify it does work to jump without a net in place. Back in 1990, I left a job to go over to Sweden to look for work with no contacts there and you know, not a whole lot of savings to fall back on. And it took some looking and took some creative interviewing to find something. But you know, within 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I had something lined up over on the other side of the Atlantic. So that felt fun and exhilarating to do, but it could have easily ended another way.
No, that's a good story, and I think sometimes if you don't have the net, you figure out a way to make it appear, you know, when you don't have a choice. So I think that's a good example, you know.
Now, one part of the net that doesn't really exist in this country, exists in just about every other industrialized country, is a health insurance system that's not tied to your employer. And it's got this archaic system, and a lot of people talk about single-payer health insurance being a something that would really promote a lot of entrepreneurial activity in agriculture, something that I think of a lot more people would be willing to take a chance and get into farming in the way that they really like to, but also in any other sort of entrepreneurship. I can see that it could offer a real incentive to know that you could leave your comfortable, secure job and still have all the health care with you. Is that something that came up during the interviews you were doing?
Yeah, I think that, and, you know, and for myself and my husband as well, that was a concern. And I am doing, you know, I have insurance through, I used e-insurance, I believe, e-health insurance to find the right provider for me as an individual. But, you know, I'm finding that there are a lot of companies out there now that aggregate entrepreneurs so you can get good group rates. And I'm doing some research on that right now to make this easier for people. But there are groups that are sort of coming up to help the individual entrepreneur so that they can get group rates and make it much more affordable.
Almost a union of entrepreneurs.
Exactly. And so they're trying to create ways for us, you know, to buy really big group health insurance so that it's affordable and also getting, you know, much better care. Because I think when you're just an individual, you usually have high deductibles and such, and that makes it pretty daunting for a lot of people.
So once you find out that information, will you post that at your website?
Absolutely. I'm doing that actually this week, so
and
we'll get that up there.
Why don't you let people know what your website is?
It's carveyourownrogue.com, just like the book title.
And why don't you tell us about some of the entrepreneurs that you met that you found to be most fascinating to you?
Yeah, I've really enjoyed Robin Wilson, and she is in New York City, and she was a recruiter like myself who found herself, you know, so successful by, you know, traditional standards, but somewhat unfulfilled. And she decided to start her own home renovation project management company, which was something, you know, completely new to her. And she did that in 2001. And today she's now an eco-design expert who's just launched her own kitchen cabinet line of eco products, you know, like bamboo and such. And she's a spokesperson for Hearst Publications, and she did Bill Clinton's office in Harlem. So her business has evolved pretty dramatically over a short period of time. She was pretty amazing to talk to about one of her big things was saying yes to opportunities, at least to explore them. Even if at face value they didn't look like the right thing, she said it's led her down some really interesting paths.
So even if it seemed way outside her comfort zone, she said yes to the opportunities.
Yeah, just at least to hearing more about it and exploring it. And, you know, so instead of just saying no right off the bat. So she said that really led her down some really interesting places that she hadn't intended on originally.
Did she give us some examples of that?
Well, I think this eco-design thing sort of came out of somebody talking to her about that opportunity. And she started to explore it by doing some eco-design products, which has led her to doing her own cabinet line. So it's just, you know, people would approach her with different things, and it led different paths. So it opened her up to a whole new world.
We're talking with Jennifer Remling. She's a co-author with her husband, Joe Remling, of Carve Your Own Road, Do What You Love, and Live the Life You Envision. Interesting book for anyone who's harboring a secret dream of doing something on their own that they haven't had a chance to do, or people who are facing, you know, involuntary layoffs and thinking, what do I do next with my life? Give Jennifer a call here at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. I'm going to ask you in a moment to talk about some of the principles that you learned from talking to all of these people, Jennifer, but why don't you tell us one more story about one of the favorite stories of the entrepreneurs that you interviewed.
Another one is Gigi Chang, and Gigi did marketing for an advertising company, and after she had her baby, her first baby, she decided to start making him or own organic baby food because she didn't like what was available on the market, and found that her friends and family were really interested in what she was doing, and did some research into the market and found that nobody was really providing this. So she decided to jump in both feet and start her own organic baby food company, knowing nothing about the food industry or how to produce organics. And just 2 years later, she's selling her products in Super Target and Whole Foods nationwide, and she's just launched her second product for children. So it's pretty amazing just what she's been able to do in such a short period of time.
That sounds like she was inspired directly by that movie set in Vermont back 15 years ago. What was it called?
Diane Baby Boom? Keaton. I remember that one.
Yeah. Same story.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just by reflecting on your own life and talking to these people who made big changes in their professional life, came up with a whole bunch of steps to be using around the mindset of clarity for the path for carving your own road. What does that look like?
Yeah, so I think that one of the key things that most people don't take the time to do is to get deep clarity about what they want to do. I think people feel like it's a luxury to do that. I've been doing a lot of workshops lately with people, and they love the process because it gives them the permission to ask themselves the bigger questions. So that's what this is about, is really getting some deep clarity about what you want in your career and your life, because I believe that work-life balance is a myth. It's not work-life, it's life. It's all life, and it's how do you integrate all the things you want into it, you know, your career, your lifestyle, your family, all of those things. And then it's also about setting some big goals that will motivate you to move forward, connecting to your vision every day by immersing yourself in it, using some of the sports psychology techniques of visualization, taking action from an inspired place, and then also learning to let go, not trying to hold on to your vision so tightly that you squeeze the life out of it. I think many of us want things to happen in a certain time frame, and we find that when it doesn't happen in the time frame we envision, we get a little frustrated. So there's a whole aspect of letting go as well.
And there seems to be a tension between, you know, letting go and setting clear goals. Can you explain how that tension works and how to resolve it?
Yeah, I think that you know, setting some clear goals and getting excited about it, but not—it's sort of like creating a balance between those two. And also, if you find that your goals are too rigid, you know, that's also the whole idea of letting go. Some of us may have a path that we're going down, and you're getting feedback that, you know, there might be a different way to do it. But if you're just so focused on your goal without looking at the feedback, you may be stuck. And the other thing too is just knowing that being able to let go when things don't go your way or the timing doesn't work, you know, being able to reset the goals or expectations around that, it's really important for continue to move forward and, you know, kind of keeping the frustration at a minimum.
And let's talk a little bit about the type of work that people choose as their dream. The people you profile in this book, Carve Your Own Road, Jennifer Remling, are primarily getting into things like your husband setting up his own architectural firm, and you talked about the eco design and organic baby food, marketing to people with services for the most part. Organic baby food, that's a product, obviously. The people that I talk to here in Vermont who have these dreams that they want to get into, they involve more manual work like farming and forestry and making wooden furniture and that sort of thing. Is that a different process when you want to get into something that is more physically oriented?
No, actually, I think it's the same, because I think that when you're doing something, the key really I found was getting away from chasing the money. That's what we found throughout the book, is finding something that you're really passionate about and that you really deeply care about, and not doing it because you want to make a ton of money at it. Money is definitely something that we all need and want, but it's making that secondary. And I think that when you're focused on what you want and you're doing it, and a lot of times when you're doing something manual or physical, you get a lot of fulfillment from it, and the money flows from that. It's when you're doing a service or providing something of value and you're excited about it, and you're treating your clients well, the money flows from that. So it's really kind of keeping that mindset around what you really care about versus, you know, what you're going to make from it.
Right. One of the people that you interviewed sat down and wrote down a set of, I think, four goals for himself. And the fourth one was uncapped income potential.
Right.
So it sounds like he was looking at the money, but do you think he managed to get away from chasing the money at the same time?
I do, because I think he made it, if you looked at, like, it was the fourth priority on the list, it wasn't number one.
That's right.
So I think that was the key. It's like, I think you still have to focus on money, but the key is not making it the number one priority. Mm. And he was able to find a job that was Randy Hing, I believe, in the book, who you know, wanted much more time with his family and much more balance in his life, but he also wanted to be able to, you know, if he did work hard, be able to benefit from it, and he found an opportunity that provided all those things for him.
Mm. What if you're not clear on what your, as you put it, your shiny thing is? You put
right.
it in the book, or your dream job. Your process gives some method for achieving clarity too.
Right. Yeah. So in the book, there's a chapter on achieving clarity, and it takes you through a series of questions about what you're looking for. So it's broken into two sections. One would be if you want to change careers, because being an entrepreneur is not for everyone. And so it's asking you a series of questions about your career, and then also if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to grow an existing business. And then really taking some time to go through and answer those questions, and then writing what I call a vision statement about that. And I included a sample of mine in there, and I connect to it on a regular basis, and it keeps me very excited and moving forward. And the really cool thing, too, about my vision statement was the one that's in the book is actually the second iteration, because the first one I created, everything happened, and so I evolved it, you know, to grow. So it's pretty cool to see when you've written these things down how they happen.
Sure, if your reach doesn't exceed your grasp, then it's time to extend your grasp or your reach or something, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I think what's interesting about life is that when you do achieve goals, I think the key is to, you know, celebrate and be excited about it, but then to continually look forward, because inevitably if you don't, something will change. You know, change is inevitable in our lives. Even if we think we're happy and we're content, you know, technology changes, you know, industries change. So we always have to be thinking about how do we evolve our dreams and, you know, visions for ourselves.
Well,
so that we can kind of keep moving forward.
Speaking of changes, I'm not sure exactly when you wrapped up the manuscript. This book came out in 2009, but you talk in the book about the world entering a recession at the point you were finishing up the manuscript, and mm-hmm. now we're pretty severely into a recession. Have you checked in with some of the people you've interviewed and find out how things are working in their entrepreneurial life in these hard times?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I've kept in touch with, I'd say, probably 90% of the people in the book, and they're all continuing to do pretty well. I mean, everybody's having issues, of course, but everybody that I've talked to is still, you know, above water and doing well and growing, you know, but dealing with some short-term, you know, issues. Nobody that I've talked to has, you know, gone under or lost their business or anything like that, because I think the key is they're so connected to what they're doing and they're so passionate about it. They're able to overcome. I believe that when you do create something like this for yourself, you can ride out a negative economy and you can be fine. And, you know, and I did this for myself was after going through that last recession in 2001, I didn't want to go through what I went through again. I wanted to reinvent myself so that I would be sort of recession-proof, and I feel like I've achieved that this time.
It seems to me that going through this creative, inventive process of thinking what you want out of life can help you be more resilient in the face of, you know, just about anything. Even if the business that you do build does wipe out, you'll be in much better shape for picking yourself up and moving on to something else.
Yeah, I think so, because I think the whole thing is always your mental state and how you're dealing with issues. And when you're really connected to what you're doing and you have a vision for where you're headed, your mental state's usually so much better because you feel like you're a little bit more in control than you are if you don't have a plan or a vision. You know, I think when you find yourself laid off or, you know, in career transition without a plan, it's very disconcerting, you know, for people, because it's like, now what? What do I do? And so I always say that right now is the perfect time, I think, for all of us, you know, to be looking at where we're going and what's happening, because the career landscape has changed, and I don't think it's going to go back to what it was. And so what does that mean for people? And I think it means that, you know, you maybe have to be more flexible about what your job or career looks like. I don't think companies are going to hire people to the levels that they did for permanent staff going forward. So I think more people are going to have to be freelance and doing independent consulting and building their own personal brands, you know. So I think it's definitely changed.
We've been talking with Jennifer Rimling. She's the author of Carve Your Own Road, Do What You Love, and Live the Life You Envision. Jennifer, you want to give us that website one more time?
Sure. It's carveyourownroad.com.
Okay, you can keep up with her and her husband, Joe Rimling, and all their further ruminations on this topic. Thanks for writing this good book, and thanks for joining us, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Coming up next, Vermont last week became the first state in the nation to plant a vegetable garden on its statehouse lawn. We're going to talk with Joanne Darling. She's a head gardener for that State House Vegetable Garden. Also, Roger Dwaran, he's a founding director of Kitchen Gardeners International. They have a campaign called Eat the View to encourage edible public landscapes everywhere. We'll be back right after this.